And joining us now through the magic of modern telephones is Carissa Cunningham. Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
I thank you for joining us so early on a Sunday morning. I hope you've had your coffee.
Oh, absolutely.
And heavily caffeinated, as we helps us get through the morning and the day and all those things, despite what it does to our calcium levels. Good morning. You know, Carissa, you're the information person at GLAAD, at Gay, Lesbian Advisors and Defenders. And I was wondering, how have you folks been coping with what happened in Maine on Tuesday? Perhaps you can run down what was expected and hoped for, and then what happened and why you think it happened.
Well, as your listeners know, we lost a ballot question on Tuesday in Maine over the state's new marriage equality law. The state's voters vetoed that law by a margin of 53-47, which, frankly, was not what we were expecting. We knew it was going to be very close and probably would not have been surprised to lose by a point. But that margin was very sobering, and I think it speaks to the conflict a lot of people feel around this issue, that, you know, there were people who were telling pollsters that they were going to support this law and then went into the ballot booth and didn't. And I think those people are genuinely conflicted. It's a very painful loss, more painful for the same-sex couples of Maine, and, you know, what it says about what their fellow citizens feel about them. But, you know, there was also a lot of good that happened in the campaign. There's a piece in the Portland Press-Herald today by Jesse Connolly, who was the campaign manager, who talked about everything that was accomplished in the campaign. We did get 47% of the vote on an issue that, you know, 10 years ago was absolutely not on the radar, and had fantastic conversations with people all around the state about this, and have a really solid foundation to go back, and I think the next time we won't lose.
What was the legislation that was overturned?
It's so much happened this year. I can't remember which month it was, right, but I believe it was in June that the Maine legislature passed a marriage equality bill to enable the state's same-sex couples to marry, and Governor Baldacci signed it on the same day. Maine, unfortunately, has a people's veto provision, which sets a very low bar for collecting signatures to enable voters to veto any piece of legislation that they might not like. You know, I do want to talk just briefly about Governor Baldacci, because I think he represents the journey that a lot of people have to go on before they get to a place where they support the right of same-sex couples to marry. I mean, he for years was a supporter of civil unions. He is a Catholic. I think he was under a lot of pressure from the church not to support this, but he was very thoughtful. He listened. He contemplated. He wrestled with this, and he finally got to a place where he not only signed the bill into law, but he was an active campaigner on the ballot question.
Was the vote evenly distributed throughout the state? Was urban Maine supportive and rural Maine opposed, or was it suburban? How did it break down?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like in a lot of places, we saw a lot of urban support for the law. You know, in Portland, for example, we got 70% of the vote, which is fantastic. I think that, you know, Maine is a very rural state, and it is a place where gays and lesbians are not necessarily as comfortable coming out to their neighbors and their coworkers as in, you know, sort of our liberal, relatively liberal bubble of Massachusetts. And I think that
bubble?
Makes a
we
big difference.
We live in a bubble?
I'm painfully reminded that I do, yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, that's something that makes a big difference. If people know somebody personally who is gay or lesbian, and in particular if it's somebody close to them, you know, somebody that they care about, it's harder for them to vote against people.
Did the churches weigh in heavily on this one?
Yes. I mean, you know, by and large, the money came from the Catholic Church in Maine, and it came from the National Organization for Marriage, which is heavily funded by the Mormon Church. It continues to be true that most of the opposition to same-sex marriage is religiously based, certainly the money behind it. And they ran a campaign that exploited people's fears and to a certain extent ignorance about homosexuality, that it was going to be taught in schools, you know, that their children were going to be recruited and brainwashed. And, you know, it's a shame that people responded to that fear-based campaign.
Mm-hmm. The idea that you have to teach it in school is something that's a little bit odd.
Yeah, it is, but it's something that they used in California with success, and I think it's an issue that our side needs to learn how to confront and deal with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that while it's you know, legally and technically correct to say that there's nothing in the marriage law that would change the curriculum in Maine, I do think it's important to acknowledge that there are children already who go to school in Maine who have two moms or two dads, and kids talk about their families in schools.
Sure.
And it's part of reality, and it benefits all children to learn to live in a diverse society.
Well,
I
live in Lexington, where we've had great conflicts in the past years over this sort of educational thing, which is simply about the idea that, yes, there are diverse family structures in our society. Some people have two parents of different sexes.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have one parent of one and one of and or just one parent.
Mm-hmm.
Some have two of the same sex. And that caused a gigantic conflict that led to the arrival of some very distasteful folks from Kansas as well, who came in to do their hate spreading and gay baiting and really, really vicious propaganda. But the communities rose up. I mean, the Lexington community actually rose up. I've been on picket lines for years about this. And it's a very empowering and moving thing to see the community come together. Did the community in Maine make a public showing after this vote to say, we're not going away, we're standing, and we're standing strong, and we encourage people to come out to let their neighbors, their loved ones, know that what they're doing is punishing them?
Yes, definitely the community in Maine has been very vocal not only since the vote on Tuesday, but you know, before. And one of the really encouraging things about this campaign has been the extent to which non-gay people have embraced this and understood this as their issue. And that's, you know, that's the only way we're going to win, obviously, not just because mathematically, you know, straight people are a huge majority over gay people, but because people need to understand it as a civil rights issue.
Mm, as a human issue,
and as about what kind of society we all live in.
As a part of almost every family, if you get into extended family structure in the United States, every family probably has gay, bisexual, lesbian, transgendered, ambiguous, confused, unclear, whatever, people who don't fit the stereotype of a normal heterosexual situation in America.
Sure.
And we
certainly all have, you know, if not gay people in our families, we all have diverse family structures.
Yes.
You know, we all have single parents in our family and,
blended,
you know,
families, iterative families.
Exactly.
From generation unto generation.
Exactly.
In that context, what I'd like to ask now, mate, it's not intended as a challenge, it's intended as a real question. At a certain point, do you think that the issue is becoming too much focused on the marriage question itself and not on broader rights? Or is marriage really the sine qua non of rights?
Well, you know, we're a legal organization, and because we do focus sometimes a bit narrowly on the law, you know, for us, what marriage is a it's a stand-in for a whole lot of other rights.
Right.
We do have a marriage-based system.
It's a
and
surrogate.
As long as we have a marriage-based system, people need to have access to it. But I totally understand the question you're asking, and it's one that we contemplate also about whether, you know, that's whether it's right to exclude from all of these rights and privileges people who need them, who aren't married, who aren't going to get married, you know, and to base everything on that.
Right. Well, just one final question from me, or actually it's a two-parter. One, where do you go now? And two, how can people get a hold of you to weigh in to help support or let you know that they're thinking about these things?
Well, people can visit us at our website, glad.org, GLAD.org. We have a blog posting right now about the main marriage question where people can weigh in. And they can also, you know, email us from that address. And we definitely want to hear from people. And, you know, I mean, after a loss like this, any movement would be remiss not to take a period of contemplation and studying exactly what happened and thinking about, you know, large strategy questions as well as sort of smaller tactical questions. And I think that's what we're going to be doing. But the one thing we're not going to be doing is going away. I mean, the only way forward is forward at this point, and we're coming back.
Well, Carissa Cunningham, I want to thank you so very, very much for being with us here on Radio with a View.
Thank you.
Sort of within just a couple of days of a real, it may not have been shocking to you. I was actually quite surprised at the vote. I actually expected a popular support for vindication of this.
Yeah. I was surprised. So, yeah, it was painful.
Yeah, I'm sure. So thank you very, very much. Keep up the struggle, and we'll talk to you hopefully on better news next time.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you very much.